Good afternoon. Welcome to the Aware Show. Hi, this is Lisa Garr. Great to be with you guys today. So I just read a very shocking statistic, and it says this is from May 2011. So last year, according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the life expectancy is currently 78 years of age. Are you kidding? 78 years old? We have got to do something about this, and we are going to do something about this today. Joining me is Dr. Lorraine Maida. She is the president and medical director of How to Live Younger. But really, this is about sharing some of the biggest mistakes people make that cause us to age quicker, and then solutions for really aging with vitality. Aging is going to happen, but we don't have to have a miserable existence during that experience, do we, people? Welcome to the show, Dr. Maida. Thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me, Lisa.
Absolutely.
I know I'm going to get old, but it's the way I'm going to age. I'm going to age very gracefully, and I'm going to add life to my years.
I think a lot of people would agree with that, Dr. Maida. And, you know, I understand the whole concept around anti-aging. We're not, you know, trying to age. We're not trying to have wrinkles, but that happens. And to happen gracefully and in a wise woman way is a nice thing. So what do you hear when, first of all, tell me a little bit about You Can Live Younger, or How to Live Younger. This is the name of your company. What a great name. I love it.
Well, thank you. I really want to help people age gracefully and slowly and help prevent and reverse the chronic degenerative diseases of aging. I say we all get rusty, crusty, fat, and inflamed, and anything we can do to slow that process is going to make life a lot more pleasant.
Well, if we got any rusty, crusty, fat, or inflamed people listening, then this show is for you. All right, let's talk about supplements. What is the biggest mistake people make with supplements?
The biggest mistake that people make with supplements is to not take an adequate dose, not assure their potency and purity, and to take the wrong forms, like synthetic forms, that are unbalanced.
So can you give me an example of something like that, or sort of wrong type of?
Sure. There was a recent study in the Women's Iowa Health Study that said that women taking multivitamins, it showed more harm than good. However, there was no standardization of the vitamins. Many took iron. If you're not deficient in iron, you shouldn't take iron. Many were on synthetic vitamin A and vitamin E. I always recommend a natural blend of mixed carotenoids and mixed tocopherols. So when you look at vitamin A and beta carotene, look for mixed carotenoids. And when you look at vitamin E, mixed tocopherols.
Okay, so in terms of multivitamin, not a great idea because you don't really know what's in it and what's synthetic. Taking the specific vitamins that your body needs is what you're recommending.
Yes, I usually measure deficiencies, but most people could benefit from a multivitamin, iron, and to make sure they're in the natural form.
Well, you know what? Talk to me about the measuring of deficiencies, because I've recently done this, and I had a test. There's a doctor here that does this, Dr. Blumenthal, that specifically measures exactly what your body is deficient. It helped me to then formulate my own vitamin plan. Then I get the massive extra doses of B's and niacin and those types of things that my body needs that wouldn't be in a multivitamin, because most people don't need that many B vitamins.
In terms of B vitamins, I would disagree. Most people under stress need extra B vitamins, and many people also have a genetic variant called a SNP that makes them unable to activate B vitamins. So you either need to take activated forms or higher doses.
Uh-huh. A lot of people have that. My parents are in that situation. So is that genetic?
Yes, it is genetic.
Mm-hmm.
It's not dangerous, but you just know, just like a roadblock, you know, have to know how to go around the block.
That's a life changer. I mean, when you find that out about yourself and you realize that your body has another way to be able to create more of its own natural energy by adjusting your doses of vitamin B, that is a game changer, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we don't
need
to drink so much coffee. All right. So talk to me a little bit about, so people come into your office and they have complaints. And are you mostly seeing women in your office, or what is the biggest complaint that you hear?
Well, I tell most people come in, they say, I don't feel like myself. I'm getting fat, flabby, flaky, foggy, fatigued, and forgetful. Those are my major complaints.
Mm-hmm.
And I do see men and women. My practice is probably 70% women and 30% men.
Around what age of people do you see?
My age range is 16 to 88, but the average patient for me is from 40 to 60.
So when people start to come in and complain about those things, it's usually after 40?
I have some people in their 30s, but the majority of my patients happen to be between 40 and 60.
Okay, so what's one of the first things that you do with them?
The first thing I do is I take a history. I find out what their complaints are, what their family history is, and what their diet is like, as well as their lifestyle. Then what I'll do is I'll run some tests. I usually measure some metabolic tests, basic chem screen and CBC, and then I also measure hormones. And when they come back, I have some information from them. They have some information by me. I usually ask them to make some dietary changes and tell me what happened. And we blend our information together and come up with a plan.
And because you are in, where are you located, by the way?
I'm in Short Hills, New Jersey.
In New Jersey. And because you're located in another area, how do you get this information to the general public?
I do webinars. Next week I'm starting a 7-week to a younger, healthier you program. I wrote a book. I have an e-book. I have telesummits.
Mm-hmm.
I have a newsletter. So I actually reach people around the world, and people who are my patients have to at least see me once a year, but I can follow them telephonically. However, my educational programs, anybody can participate in.
One of the reasons that I liked you so much, and I met you a little while ago when you were here in Los Angeles, was your information about thyroid illness. And there are I personally think that thyroid is one of those sleeper illnesses that goes easily undiagnosed because it masks so many different symptoms, from fatigue to dry skin, a lot of cosmetic things, hair falling out and so forth, low energy, weight gain, metabolism change. And it's hard to put your finger on exactly what, you know, those things are from. It could be stress-related. It could be lack of sleep. But what is it that you find in your practice? Do you find that a lot of people have issues with hyper or hypothyroidism?
Absolutely. And, you know, the misnomer is people will come in and say, my doctor said it's normal. But doctors do a screening test called TSH, standing for thyroid stimulating hormone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a screening test. It doesn't go beneath the surface. So they're frustrated because the main complaints are fatigue, weight gain, hair loss. Women freak out when they start losing their hair. And the eyebrows on the edges
mm-hmm.
get, you know, they disappear.
Mm-hmm.
But even psychiatrists send people to me because of depression. Thyroid is very much linked to depression, memory, also menstrual irregularities and infertility.
Mm-hmm. And
but
if you
people come to me more for the weight gain, the fatigue, and the hair loss.
Well, if you think about most of the supplements out there, they're all addressing one of these things: weight gain, the hair, you know, healthy hair, depression. Huge supplementation out there for that with pharmaceuticals. Infertility, that's a huge business. I mean, if you look at these individual things that are being addressed in the medical community as well as the alternative community, it's interesting to me that more people don't understand that it's all linked to this one thing, the thyroid.
It is, but yeah. I measure all of the hormones because sometimes it's cortisol and the stress hormone mm-hmm. that can cause a lot of those same symptoms. So measuring all of the hormones and looking at the complete picture, as well as looking at the diet and lifestyle, really helps pinpoint what the main issue is for this particular person.
So
if you only fix one thing, you might have other lingering things.
Exactly. So an elevated cortisol can also cause these same symptoms?
Yes,
so
absolutely. You get fat, you can lose your hair when your cortisol fluctuates, and you get energy dips.
Well, what's the relationship between the adrenals and the thyroid gland?
Well, if you have high cortisol levels, it prevents the conversion of the inactive form of thyroid hormone into the active form of thyroid hormone. So it really can slow your metabolism down.
Interesting. All right, so what can people do about something like this? You think the best step is awareness?
The best step is awareness and also seeking out somebody who's going to look at thyroid differently. When I measure thyroid, I measure the TSH, the free T3, the free T4, and reverse T3. And the normal is not always optimal because the range of TSH is 0.5 to 5. And now there are new recommendations by the American Association of Clinical Endocrinology to say it's 0.3 to 3. But if a doctor sees a lab report and you have a TSH of 5, he's going to say that's normal because, you know, people are afraid to go against what the norms are out there. It takes a while to change people's thinking around this. So I would say people should be educated and go into their doctor with this information. And there are some endocrine disruptors, meaning hormone disruptors, that everybody can avoid.
Okay, I want to get into that for a sec, but I want to be really specific with people. So if you go to your doctor and you get a TSH test for thyroid, you want to ask your doctor for the free T3, free T4, and reverse T3? Is that what you said?
Yes. Many of them might not know what to do with that, but at least what you can do is go in with some information about the TSH and what is an optimal value.
And this information's in the book Vibrance for Life?
Yes, it is in the book Vibrance for Life.
And also, let's give people a website so that they can get educated on this.
It's easy, vibranceforlife.com.
Okay. And you can basically pull up in there what types of things to look for, what types of things to go to your doctor and ask. I mean, this is, for me, the new healthcare. The new healthcare is taking charge of our own lives and our own bodies and not giving up so much responsibility, but going into a doctor informed. There is, okay, first of all, the internet has an enormous amount of information. You can get lost there. But if you do research and you find things that make sense to you, and you can go into your doctor with an educated amount of research and say, this is how I'm feeling, this is what I've researched and read about, what do you think, can you do these tests? Then you can maybe be a part of your healing and really pay attention to some of the markers and the signs that these 14-page questionnaires asks you when you get into a doctor's office.
Absolutely, and it's all in the approach. And if you don't have somebody who's going to be your partner, I work with my patients' doctors, and I really feel they should be fully informed, and so should the other doctors. And I have a lot of doctors who come to me as patients, and also we refer back and forth because no one person can know everything. So just understand, the medical literature is enormous. And the amount of change is very fast, but it's hard to take hold. So the approach, how you approach your doctor, is really going to make a difference.
I've always wondered about the team approach because there are a lot of different specialists that could offer a lot of different advice, but they don't always have time to collaborate on one patient. Can you suggest a way to empower the patients on how to get that to happen?
It can be a difficult thing, but I think what I do is I make sure I give my patients all their records. I always recommend the patients ask for their lab tests, ask for their reports, and write down the comments that other doctors say. Because you know what happens with doctors? We try to call each other and we play telephone tag.
Oh, I'm sure. You're all busy.
If the patient goes in with their records from the other doctor and with some notes and said, please, my doctor said, call me. Sometimes just knowing that and seeing the report makes a difference because I can't tell you how many patients will come in with their interpretation of what the report meant. And then when I read the report, it's completely different. So I want to see the report, not just the patient's interpretation of it or another doctor's interpretation of it.
There's actually a company that I got to remember the name of or find the name out of. If anyone's interested, they could email me. But there's a company that has all of your medical records in a database so that it can be accessed through all of your different doctors. I can't remember the name of the company. If someone's,
I use Relay Health.
You do?
I don't know if that's, yes, I use Relay Health. Most of the hospitals in my area use it, and it's a way that patients can have access to their records and doctors, and they can communicate with me confidentially, and doctors can also access other, if the patient gives permission, records from other doctors and the hospital.
So if a blood test is taken or some type of test is taken and the results are online, I mean, I have a friend who just who missed a breast cancer screening, and she was told that it was irregular, and she denied it or she didn't want to pay attention to it, and now is in a very, very difficult situation. So is there a way that if you, when you have those types of screenings, they are automatically put up onto these health sites so that other doctors can look and say, you need to take care of this if they were to look in there?
Our medical records are not as it's not as smooth as one would think. I upload them, but some patients don't want it online, so I have to respect that because they're afraid of what's out there and security. These are HIPAA compliant with medical security and privacy laws.
Right.
So not everything is automatically uploaded. I do that as a service for my patients, but it's a lot of work and it's a lot of time.
Well, okay, we've gotten into a different direction here, but I think it's all really good ideas. Excuse me. All right, let's go back into the aspects of that people do that cause us to age quicker. What do you think some of the things are, other than stress, we've spoken about that, and the cortisol levels, that cause us to age quickly?
It's how you eat, because that's going to stop the being rusty, crusty, fat, and inflamed, because we get rusty, which is oxidation, and it shows on the face as wrinkling. We get inflamed, and that's anything with an itis, arthritis, gingivitis, gastritis, aches and pains, because inflammation is the root cause of asthma, allergies, cancer, dementia, autoimmune disease, and more. So that's inflammation, and that's burning. And oxidation, inflammation, and then glycation is sugar binding to proteins. So if you look at a cataract, that's a sugar binding to the lens of your eye. And that can happen all over your body. So these are the ways we age and we can combat that with what we eat. So when we want antioxidants and we find those in colorful fruits and vegetables, the more colors and the more variety, the better. We don't find it in white starchy foods. White starchy and sugary foods raise our blood sugar level. That blood sugar has nowhere to go but binding to proteins, and that's what glycation is. So we want low sugar, low glycemic diet. And fats, we want more anti-inflammatory fats. And I call those fats that flow, because these are anything that can be made into an oil, like fish, nuts, seeds, and avocados, and olives, and their oils.
Now, did you mention that there is the wrong type of fish oil that you could take? Or would it be the wrong type for your body?
Well, fish oil, a lot of times I tell people over-the-counter fish oil, you'll see 1,000 milligrams of fish oil. But when you actually look at it, the active ingredients are really EPA and DHA. And most of the over-the-counter fish oils have only 320 milligrams. So you think you're getting 1,000 milligrams, but the rest are kind of filler oils. So it's better to get a highly concentrated, purified fish oil, because if it's contaminated with PCB and mercury, you're doing yourself more harm than good.
What type of filler oils and how is that listed on a label?
It's not. You'll just see fish oil, 1,000 milligrams, and then you'll see EPA and then DHA, and they add up to about 320. They're just not the omega-3 oils, which is what we need more of.
Interesting. Okay, so that's you really need to look for a highly concentrated, good source. And I like to read about the companies, and of course I interview them too. So I'm really emphatic about that type of thing.
I could give you many more details about fish oil.
You can? Please
yes.
Do, because, I mean, people say it's great for inflammation. Is it?
It is great for inflammation. And, we were designed to have a ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 of 1 to 1 or 2 to 1. We start having disease at 4 to 1, but the standard American diet is 10 to 25 to 1. So the omega-6 comes from grains. The omega-3s is why we want more omega-3s.
Oh.
And it's best to get them with the natural triglyceride backbone, because they're better absorbed. They're not as easily oxidized, because any oil that's oxidized is actually harmful.
Because it's rancid is at that point,
yeah,
is that right?
Exactly. So that's also why you never take a fish oil without having a lot of antioxidants
included with it. So the omega-6s are from grains. If you have a gluten or wheat intolerance, does that cause that same type of intolerance from the oil?
Not necessarily, no. The gluten isn't in the oil.
Okay, well, that's good to know. All right. So you had mentioned about sugar binding to cataracts. As people age, you commonly hear them say that they have failing eyesight. Is that the reason? Is it because of a lot of sugar in the diet? Or it would be
that's
nice if it was.
That's the only reason. But sugar can bind to any protein in your body. And that's why diabetics have an accelerated rate of cataracts, heart disease, kidney failure, nerve disorders, and dementia. Because it's binding to the proteins all over their body. And that interferes with the structure and the function and the communication. So it's very problematic. It happens in all of us at a low level every time you have anything that your body can't burn immediately.
So this is maybe one of the reasons for eyesight, but what can people do in order to help their eyesight as they age?
Always wear sunglasses because ultraviolet rays damage your eyes. You want a lot of antioxidants. You definitely need high doses of antioxidants to preserve eyesight. Estrogen is also helpful. You know, there's actually estrogen receptors on the lenses of our eyes.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So now that kind of leads us into the hormone conversation and synthetic hormones versus bioidentical hormones. Do you suggest that people go down that line and attempt to do that protocol?
If you're symptomatic and you have low levels, I would definitely recommend it. The International Menopause Society just came out with a statement last June saying the earlier you have symptoms, the earlier you start, the better. Bioidenticals are safer, and they show some benefits.
And you agree with that?
Yes, I do.
You do?
I take them myself.
You do? Okay. All right.
I do. I wouldn't give anybody anything I wouldn't take myself.
That's good. You try it on yourself first. Well, then, let's find out about the truth about a declining sex drive when you age. Is that due to stress? Is that common? Is it not common?
It's very common. It could be due... In men, it's usually low testosterone because men under stress, they can still have a libido. Women need testosterone too. And some women, if they're low in testosterone, you replace testosterone, their sex drive returns. However, even women with normal testosterone, they're much more sensitive to stress. A woman under stress who's tired and not sleeping, especially if they're having night sweats and hot flashes, they're not going to have a sex drive. So stress is very, very important. It's a much more important indicator for women than it is for men.
So in terms of sex drive, that they're directly related to stress.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And so how much sleep do you recommend? I mean, what's your opinion on it?
6 to 8 hours.
6 to 8?
Yes.
So that will enable a person to have normal sex drive and to have lower and reduced levels of not stress, but the effects of stress and so forth and metabolism variances and so forth. Is that right?
Yes, because when you sleep, you know, that's when all your hormones get balanced. That's when growth hormone is produced. It's produced when you're sleeping.
Right.
And if you don't sleep, you can't make it. And I have some people who have a hard time losing weight, and that's because of lack of sleep.
Mm. That's interesting. You know, that's absolutely related. The other thing that people notice when they age is memory loss. This is something that's just another common complaint, memory slipping with age, so forth. You hear that a lot. What is that related to physiologically?
It can be due to many things. First of all, you need good nutrition for your brain. Fish oil is wonderful. We're all fatheads. We have a lot of DHA, which is the, you know, what fish eat, algae. And DHA is what's found in the algae. That's what our brains are made of. So it's good nutrition, antioxidants, low sugar. Then you need good circulation to get it to your brain. So you need exercise and you need open arteries. So keeping your cholesterol lower so that you don't form plaque is very important. You also want to make sure you're not on medications that are going to cause blood clotting, and if you have a risk of blood clotting, then you take, you know, a baby aspirin a day. So it could be nutrition, circulation, lack of exercise, hormone decline. You know, estrogen is very much linked to memory, and so is thyroid.
Interesting. And thyroid is also linked to depression, as you had mentioned early.
Absolutely.
Do you notice a large amount of your clients come to you on antidepressants or wanting to get off of antidepressants?
Yes, I do. And I have some that were recommended to be on antidepressants. And when I balance their hormones, they get better without antidepressants.
And
not everybody. I want to caution people. I have patients, I can't get them off antidepressants. They're just not ready. You just need to wean off slowly, and not everybody can get off of them. So I try to warn people, don't just throw your antidepressants away. In many cases, we can get you off, and we can lower the dose or prevent you from being on them. But sometimes they're a necessity.
Well, I think the bottom line is everybody is different. Every individual is different. And it's more about empowering people with the knowledge that they need and that they can have access to in order to go to their doctors and say, listen, maybe there's a different approach to this. Maybe we should try this. Here's some research I found about this. And be a part of your healing process. And I think this is one of the most empowering things that women and men could possibly do, is to take charge of our health. And that's one of the reasons why I think it's great that you put all this information out there that's available for people. Once again, the website is vibranceforlife.com.
Yes.
That's right. And you said there's an ebook on there where people can get information for free.
Yes. And I have a blog, and I have a newsletter, and I have 7 top tips for anti-aging, so they can sign up for all of that, and it's free.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Maida. This has been a great conversation, a good thing for people to know, especially in the beginning of the year, so that if you have any types of health challenges you're not paying attention to, this is a positive, empowering way for you to be able to take charge of your own health. Thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I have a passion for prevention, and I want to spread the word.
Oh, I love that. Passion for prevention. That's great. All right. Thanks a lot, Lorraine. We'll talk to you again soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. We will be right back. This is Lisa Gar. You're listening to The Aware Show.